going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
All right, phone calls. We're coming right to you in 1 minute. Reaction on everything with this NFL draft.
If you've spent time building the right roster and earned the fans, then you need the best technology to back it up. Get rid of those flimsy tablets and slow computers and step up to the game changer and point of sale solutions for restaurants and bars, PDQ POS. Imagine a seamless and lightning fast checkout experience for your customers that saves you money by cutting out those costly fees. Their state-of-the-art technology ensures that transactions are swift, secure, and hassle-free. But that's not all. PDQ Signature Systems is not just a POS system, it's a complete business management solution. Keep track of your inventory, easily manage your staff, and use real-time analytics to optimize your sales. Their user-friendly interface makes it simple for anyone to navigate. Join the thousands of companies that have already made the switch and upgrade to PDQ Signature Systems. Whether you have one restaurant or hundreds, PDQ will customize a POS solution for your specific needs. Upgrade to the professional point of sale. Visit PDQPOS.com. That's PDQPOS.com.
All right, hope you're having a great start to your Monday morning. Another week, obviously. Phils did a nice job this weekend. Nola, in particular, last night. Going 7 innings, giving up only one run. Bats were not exactly totally alive, but they did enough. Of course, scored a bunch of runs on Saturday. You can weigh in on everything. And we're going to get to the Shedeur Sanders situation more in a moment because all sorts of audio, including some reports over the weekend, the prank phone call, we're going to get to that. That was disgraceful. There's a lot. There's a lot on the Shedeur Sanders thing on the table. We'll continue to discuss it. Let's get to JP in Plymouth Meeting. JP, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's everybody doing? Devin, how are you? Did you guys have a good weekend?
Doing well, JP. How are you?
Yeah, all good, buddy.
I'm getting over a really bad stomach bug. That's why you didn't hear from me at all last week. But it's my first day back at work. I'm feeling great, ready to kick butt and take names.
There you go.
The draft. So I didn't really catch much of the draft because I was really sick. But I do love the Jahad Campbell pick. I really do. We'll see with, like, the other picks, you know, how they pan out, but Howie Roseman knows what he's doing. He even said it, like, quarterbacks nowadays are explosive, and this guy's going to get to those explosive quarterbacks.
Look, I'll just say this about Howie, JP, and I don't make this based on this statement based on this draft, but just his track record. If Howie Roseman was a free agent general manager, with how many billions with a B these owners have, I mean, like, if I'm the Atlanta Falcons owner, I'd pay him $25 million if I could.
JP,
I mean, why not? I mean, he puts together great teams.
JP, I don't understand what you're talking about, saying you were sick so you didn't catch the draft. That's weird, man.
You couldn't remote control it? You couldn't lie in bed?
All you have to do is sit and watch.
He said he had a stomach bug.
Come on!
Maybe he couldn't have left the bathroom, okay? Like, you might not have a TV in the bathroom.
I was in the hospital.
Sorry, JP. I'm.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's another level.
Yeah, I was completely and utterly dehydrated. They had to give me like 4 bags of fluids. I was in bad shape. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
The Phillies. Let's talk about the Phillies. They took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. You know, and Nola pitched a decent game.
He did. Pitched well.
Against a good team.
Against a good team, by the way.
You're right. Exactly. Against a good team. A team that, before the season started, said, how are they going to face against the Cubs? How are they going to face against the Padres? How are they going to face against the Dodgers? Not too bad of these teams that they have to face.
He did a good job. All right, JP, give me an answer. What was unbelievable? You can win the Elvis Costello tickets.
So my answer is going to tie in with the Phillies. The Phillies' record today, as it stands, is the same record that they had in 2008 at this point, and the same record that they had in 1980 at this point.
No way.
All right. You know what the flip
side?
Yeah, you know what the flip side of that is, though? They probably had this exact same record like 17 other seasons in their 140 years and did not win.
162 games, got a lot of variability.
All right, let's get to Bam right now in Upper Darby. What's going on, Bam? All right, Bam is absolutely not ready to go. We go to Jordan right now. Jordan, good morning.
Good morning, Philadelphia. Good morning, morning show. I want to start off by just saying thanks for letting me call in. Last couple of weeks, months, is a new thing for me, and I talk on the phone all day for a living, and you guys are great. I've been listening. I feel like I'm part of a community now, and really like that feeling of community. So appreciate the show. Appreciate letting me call in and just talk for a little bit in the morning.
Our pleasure, buddy. You're a good caller. Keep them coming.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I didn't see most of the draft. I was in Copenhagen this weekend, and I don't usually watch the draft. It's something I'll, you know, training camp, I'll see who actually makes the roster. But I want to comment just on one thing regarding our tight end. This has a lot of elements to me of what the Phillies did with Boehm in the offseason, and I just don't like it. You know, this guy's been a decent player, Goddard, for us. He helped us win championships. I think they got to keep quiet a little bit more, figure this out behind the scenes, show the guy a little respect. Set some direction. I think both the fans and the player deserve it.
Well, I'm torn on that. So here's what I'll say to that. Love Goddard, but this is the business of sports. I don't think the Eagles have gone out of their way to publicize it. I think the Boehm comparison is interesting. That grabs my attention. But, you know, the reality is when you have so many great players, you can't pay them all. They're obviously in a financial standoff with him. And sounds like they wanted to try to move him. The league spoke volumes of being not that interested, which is similar to the Phillies thing with Boehm. The league wasn't that interested. Didn't make a deal that made the Phillies bite. Didn't make a deal that made the Eagles bite. And it's not all, you know, listen, at some point, organizations got to take a stand against a guy and say, we think you're worth $5 million. We don't think you're worth $10 million. And that's not rude. That's just a salary cap world. That's what it is.
And I think it's fine to conduct those conversations behind closed doors.
Well, here's what I'll say to their credit. They have. Now, the reality is, per NFL rules, Howie Roseman has to go out there and address the media every once in a while. So he's going to be asked. So he answers. I thought Howie said some very complimentary things about Goddard over the weekend. I mean, Devin had in the update, very complimentary.
But it's, you know, it's the classic, you compliment a guy, you zing him, and then you compliment him again on the way out. I think they could choose to be a little more tight-lipped, and they're not. I personally like to see the guy on the team, good clubhouse guy, great player. And frankly, we have no other options right now. So you're not going to send Calcaterra out there as your tight end one. I just don't see that happening.
Well, I think Calcaterra is better than some people are giving him credit for. He's not great, but they've won games with Calcaterra starting. I don't think they fall off a cliff if Calcaterra is the tight end.
Hey, that's a fair assessment. Moving on to the Phillies very quickly. Number one, I mean, Romano in the 10th inning last night. Like, I had a diverted flight to Dulles. I'm 7 hours late. I get in at 1 a.m. You're going to make me watch a Sunday night baseball game. Goes into the 10th inning. You're going to put Jordan Romano in as our savior, as our hero.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it because there's a K word of a player we don't say in our house. But he looked a lot with this motion and dangle in his arm, and the guy goes out there in a high-leverage situation, and I'm just real happy that he didn't blow it. My big fix for the Phillies right now, the bullpen, I think it's going to work itself out. We got to make moves. I'm glad it's early in the season. Kevin Long, you're done, man. I'm sorry. I think your time in Philly is over. The bats are getting cold again. We got way too much money invested in our payroll to not have players. perform at the plate to the standard.
Well,
we expect.
Here's the one thing I'll say, Jordan. I was really struck by some numbers Rob Ellis put out there. I think it was over the weekend on the Phillies bats. I think entering Saturday. I saw a clip online. The Phillies were in the top five in baseball in on base percentage. They were, this was as of 2 days ago, I believe, 21st in slugging percentage. Now, what does that mean? That means that I think Kevin Long has gotten them to change their approach a bit. Something that millions of us called for after last October. I compliment Kevin Long for the fact that there have been adjustments made. And I think we as a fan base, while frustrated with the lack of homers and doubles and all that, also got to give these guys a little bit of room to try to work out the kinks of an adjustment. You don't make an adjustment and then immediately be a wildly successful player the other way. I mean, now listen, is it unusual to be top five in one and 21st in the other? Yeah, that's weird. Because normally a great hitter is kind of a great hitter and you can slug and you get on base and all that. But I'm not
numbers
as quick.
Numbers aside, though, doesn't it feel like we're looking at the same team down the stretch last year at the plate?
Well, in the last 2 weeks, it did. But you got to admit, Jordan, if they're top five in on base percentage, it's nothing to sneeze at. The bottom line is Bohm has to freaking drive the ball. Trey Turner has to drive the ball. I mean, we're talking about guys whose slugging percentages have been in the 300s this year. That's a disgrace. I don't know that that's Kevin Long. I mean, Trey had a good game last night. Jordan, give me an answer. What was unbelievable?
Atomic science. The fact that everything around us is built up of billions of tiny atoms moving at an inconceivable speed is something that I will forever find unbelievable, and I hope John Ritchie does too.
All right, my man. You got it.
Sure is.
94.
Incredibly unbelievable. And how do we apply that to Alec Bohm? All of these elements, all of these particles assembling into Alec Bohm, who is giant.
Yeah.
He is gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, that's a lot of molecules. We're talking about a lot of elements.
Yeah,
we're talking about a lot of atoms.
Why? Atoms and molecules to
why can't he
Bohm
hit the ball out of the park? Like, hit the ball far.
I know.
Hit the ball so it's elevated 45 degrees and just the trajectory carries it away and out of the stadium.
He just doesn't have.
Alec Bohm is gigantic. I mean, just look at the guy. He should be able, and I know that you said it's the sizzle chest.
No, I didn't say sizzle. I said concave.
Oh.
Concave chest.
Sizzle chest.
Yeah, this is what John.
What's a sizzle chest?
I don't even know.
He's trying to stick me with sizzle chest.
All right. You said whatever it was.
Concave.
That was a couple years ago.
Yeah,
you know, like we're talking, you've had a lot of time.
You gotta admit, I wasn't wrong.
Working and building, lifting.
Guys, it's almost
strengthening.
It's almost May. He's got no home runs. He's third baseman.
Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper have like more home runs than anyone else on the team combined. Some insane stat like that. I was talking to Ruben Amaro about Kevin Long and the hitting on Saturday on WIP, and he had an interesting point where he basically said it could be paralysis by, overanalysis, basically that these guys are just overthinking and they need to clear their minds and just hit the baseball. And I think that is certainly the case for Alec Bohm. Like, you can see them all just kind of overthinking up there at the plate. And you see glimpses of them, improving their bats. Like, on Saturday, I thought their game and their offense was great. But then last night they won, but they should have won by more, in my opinion. So,
well, here's the thing I'll say about what Ruben said there. He may be entirely right, and he played MLB ball and I didn't. But I want them thinking up there. I mean, what they did versus the Mets was a disgrace, and I do think they're chasing less pitches. Now, do I think that's affecting them driving the ball? Yes.
I think there's a balance.
There is. And they
have to find that middle ground.
And they're struggling with that balance.
They have not found it quite yet.
They are struggling with that balance. All right. Let's get to more of the Shedeur Sanders situation. Let's get to the prank phone call. If you haven't heard this yet, it's a real disgrace. 21-year-old punk kid.
I actually haven't heard it, and I'm kind of scared.
Yeah. I
didn't listen because I didn't want it. I feel like it would make me sad or something.
Yeah, no, it's not good. So we're only going to play a small portion of it. The 21-year-old son of the Saints is the Saints,
Falcons.
Right?
No, Falcons.
Falcons. Falcons defensive coordinator, a couple days ago, had some of his notes out. Might have been written, might have been on an iPad. I don't know what it was.
Against this guy.
It was an iPad.
Ulbrich.
Huh?
It was an iPad. Yeah.
iPad. All right. So the poor defensive coordinator doing his job studying for the draft. He's got information in front of him. The 21-year-old son sees the information with Shedeur Sanders' cell phone, grabs it, and says to himself, with my friends, I'm gonna pull one on draft day. And he did. And this kid is a piece of garbage. Lissa, we'll play the beginning portion here. Listen to when the 21-year-old son of the Falcons coordinator initiates this phone call. This was day one with, I think this was day one with Shedeur Sanders.
Hey, is this Shedeur? This is Mickey Loomis here, the GM of the New Orleans Saints. How you doing? This is Mickey Loomis here, GM of the Saints.
How you doing?
Good, how are you, man?
Good, we're waiting on
you. Yeah, we have. It's been a long wait, man. We're going to take you with our next pick right here, man.
It's going to be nothing to
do. Hey, but you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, man. Sorry about that.
I mean, and by the way, it wasn't day one. It was not the first day of the draft. All right, so, John, let me start with this. I want to, because, John, I've been waiting all weekend since hearing, I guess it came out yesterday. I've been wanting to ask you this question. As a father of three, how out of your mind with your son would you be if one of your children pulled this move?
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Right?
I can't even imagine. And Jeff Ulbrich, this defensive coordinator, I played against Jeff. Like, we're the same age.
Yep.
Ish, you know.
What a
awful
situation.
Just incredible. An incredible invasion, an incredible desecration of something that is sacred to some degree. I'm not going to go overboard and, you know.
It's such an affront to both Shedeur Sanders and the guy's dad. I mean, it's a real violation of his own. It's a tremendous violation of his own father.
Yeah.
I mean, he stole information from his father's iPad and pulled a prank.
And a lack of caring of what happens to his dad.
Oh.
If his dad was fired for that, he could have lost his dad's job.
No, he wasn't. They're saying no discipline.
The Saints could have been, though.
No, of course he could have been. The NFL and the Saints, NFL and the Falcons are saying no discipline for the coordinator because they know it wasn't his fault. I mean, I guess you can say next time lock and key with some information if you got a punk around that's your kid. But you get the point. I mean, it's not the dad's fault. He's got information on a desk. The freaking kid gets the information and pulls that and then goes public with it? Look, I don't know what can be done to the kid. I mean, I am no legal expert. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything there. I know this.
That's mortifying.
If he was my kid, I don't even know how to finish the sentence.
If he was my kid, I
would be.
There is no punishment that's appropriate for this. When I was going into ninth grade, I totally messed up, and I had a bunch of friends over when my parents went away and trusted me.
Yeah.
I was grounded for the rest of the summer. It ended up being, 3 months or whatever. I had to do all the laundry in the house.
Yeah.
I had to do all the, the chores and everything.
3 months is serious.
Grounded.
That's a big punishment.
No TV, no radio, no electronic usage. It was like return to 1800. And I thought that was extreme. But there is no punishment that's even close to appropriate. I mean, ground him for the next 3 years.
Right.
You can't make it appropriate for what he's done here.
It's a disgrace. The kid issued an apology. I mean, what's the point of even reading it? I mean, he apologizes.
Yeah,
but what a jackass. I mean, seriously.
No, that's a good way to sum it up. What a jackass.
I mean,
you don't have anything better to do with your time if you're that kid.
And to be clear,
would you think that was a good idea?
Totally.
Ever?
And there are some, I'm not the guy that's not in a joke here and there. Life is, you're supposed to have some fun and some laughs and stuff like that, but not like this. This was really, and by the way, it was also going around, there were any number of other people that got prank phone calls. So the league's got an issue. They're going to have to figure out a way. I don't know if they're going to have to do it where the league connects the teams to the players through, I'll use the word a portal, through a portal. They're going to have to figure out something because because apparently, you know, Shedeur Sanders was far from the only person that, got pranked. It's not cool, man. It's really not good. 215-592-9494. All right, so the Eagles made a number of picks over the weekend. Matter of fact, from Friday and Saturday, they made 9. 10 picks total in this draft, but 9 when you combine Friday and Saturday. The Eagles' second-round pick was the safety from Texas, Andrew Mukuba, who, you know, based on the film, you know, the guy looks like a playmaker. Now, you know, we'll see in time how good is he. I mean, Doc was a second-round safety. Couldn't have gone better. Jaquan Jarrett was a second-round safety. Couldn't have gone worse. So, you know, we'll find out what this Mukuba guy has. But he looks like he throws the lumber around, and it looks like he's got some range. He's a smaller – it does kind of look like CJ GJ a little bit.
Throws the lumber around?
Yeah.
Like a young like Joe DeCamera?
Sure. Yeah, like a young Joe DeCamera.
You know,
yeah,
Joe played
throwing
safety.
The lumber around.
We're talking about a guy who knows what it means to stalk wide receivers in the secondary.
Wait till Fritz gets a load of me. All right, let's listen first off to ESPN's detailed breakdown of Mukuba. When he was drafted on Friday night, Mel Kiper and the gang had a breakdown of Mukuba. Here's what they said.
4-year starter at safety, had a huge senior season with 5 interceptions, strong against the run as well. All three of you guys absolutely love him. Began his college career at Clemson, spent 3 years there before transferring to Austin.
I'll tell you what, for his size, he plays like a much bigger safety. 5'11 and a quarter, 186 pounds. He hits like a linebacker. He's a smart football player, recognizes his diagnosis. Well, he had 1 career interception in 3 years at Clemson. He had 5 interceptions at Texas in this 1 year, 69 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, Lou. I look at a kid who hits like a linebacker. Reminds me of the Raiders back in the day with Atkinson and Tatum. Wow, he will light you up.
Hey, he is everything you want in a DB. Everything. Everything. Instincts, competitiveness, tackling, man-to-man coverage, zone coverage instincts. That hit that he had in the SEC Championship, oh my goodness. Talk to Steve Sarkisian about this young man. He said the only thing he doesn't have is ideal size. That's it. All Everything right. else he has.
That's very high praise from Lewis Riddick.
Yeah.
Very high praise. All right. Your chance to react
who
to what the Eagles.
Safety himself,
who was a safety?
Who knows the position better
also,
than anyone.
Also, apparently he was briefly roommates with Trotter Jr. when he was at Clemson.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
They got that connection.
All right. So what you make of what Howie did and did not do in the draft? Most notable thing he did not do was draft a tight end. So maybe Goddard stays. Time will tell on that as well. Also, more on the Shedeur Sanders situation, including something Tom Pelissero reported about the Shedeur Sanders in the pre-draft process. That and more. Phone calls.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
On all these topics and more audio of some of these guys when they got drafted, their interactions with Howie and the Eagles brass on the phone. That's all up ahead. Your phone calls as well, 94 WIP.
Imagine.
Pitch. Swung on, ground ball back at Romano. He knocks it down. Picks it up, flips to first, and the Phillies come back and win the series over the Cubs. After suffering their 5th straight loss on Friday on a cold and grueling afternoon, they come back and win the weekend, taking 2 straight, including tonight, a 3-1 final in extra innings.
Well, I know the Phillies took a back seat to the Eagles. I think for most of us this weekend, Phillies took a back seat because the draft is such a big deal. And you had both the Eagles situation and the Shedeur Sanders situation going on. But it was a nice weekend by the Phillies. They did what they had to do. And the biggest thing from a Phillies standpoint this weekend was seeing Nola pitch well. I mean, 7 innings, 1 run. That's a really good job by Aaron Nola. And hopefully he can keep that going. He certainly needed it. Not that he had been horrendous in all the outings, but he hadn't pitched particularly well. ERA was high. He lost all the starts. So it was good to see the Phillies get a win. And in particular, him pitch really, really well. 215-592-9494. Eagles got an A- from Mel Kiper with his final write-up on their draft. And I want to just give you a little taste of some of what Mel said, talking about the guys from day 2 and 3. Mel said, I mentioned in my Friday night recap how much I like safety Andrew Mukuba, whom Philly got at the end of round two. He can play the role vacated by the trade of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He hits like a linebacker. On day three, offensive tackle Cameron Williams could be a steal. If Philly can help him put his all of his talent together. He started just one college season. I had him number 125 on my big board. Ty Robinson will join Fangio's deep front seven and play multiple positions. Linebacker Shmuel Mondin Jr. can be a special teams demon.
Did you say Shmuel?
Is that what we're going with?
Well, what Shmuel? Is it?
I thought it was
it's
like
definitely
smile.
Not that.
I don't think it's Shmuel.
Shmuel sounds dirty, doesn't it? Just,
it reminds me
on.
Of Shmuel.
Let's sound it out.
Reminds
Lord
me of
the Rings.
Reminds me of Laverne and Shirley.
Let's sound it out. Okay. S-M-A-E-L.
Shmaley.
Smail.
I think it would be more smail.
But
maybe?
I didn't hear anyone say Shmail.
Why did you go with Shmeal?
Well, you know what? We actually have the audio of Howie calling him. So let's listen to what Howie called him. All right, let me just finish this from Mel real quick, and then we'll get to that. Says he can be a special teams demon. Quarterback Kyle McCord is a solid number three QB. Roseman has done it again, selecting solid players throughout the draft.
Value.
Yeah, well.
At every junction, it felt like he was getting value. It felt like that player, holy cow, we got him in the fifth round and it was projected he was going to go in the third. Holy cow, we got him in the sixth and he was supposed to be a fourth rounder. It really did feel that was consistent.
Yeah, okay.
Which is great for
I
us.
I believe it is Smile.
No way.
That's what play the audio. That's what Google
that
says.
That makes a lot of sense.
When he was drafted, they smile. Definitely said Smile because I remember I did a double take.
Okay.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense.
All right, let's... actually, I don't have the audio of Howie with that guy. I'm sorry. I thought
no.
we... No, my fault. Bad job by me. Bad job by me.
Now we'll never know.
It's good, but it makes sense that someone would have that name now. I was confused initially.
Yeah. All right, let's
His
listen.
Smile.
Well, I'll play one piece of Howie audio for you, because the Eagles obviously did not trade up much at all, and they kept trading back and back. Other than in the first round, they kept trading back and back and back. Here's Howie when all was said and done on the fact that the Eagles did not trade up much.
This is Howie Roseman from the Eagles.
No, hold on. Wrong one,
hey,
Fran.
How you doing?
Fran, wrong one.
You ready to come to...
All right, we're going to get to Howie talking about not trading up much and obviously trading back quite a bit. Here is Howie Roseman.
Would you have been surprised to come out still with all of your picks for next year, having used those?
Yes.
Nick,
is that a market thing?
Were teams less willing to take on future picks?
I feel like do we trade up once out of the five trades?
Yeah.
So we traded up once. So usually those things happen when you're trading up. There were probably other opportunities that maybe we were looking to trade up and that we would have included stuff. But we're gonna have a lot of picks next year.
Sure are. Sure are. I will say I was surprised with how many picks they had this year and next year combined entering Thursday that there weren't more packaged to get less picks but greater value up.
Yeah.
That was just struck me as an unusual way to go about it for a team that has so many great players already.
Well, they tried. Like you mean like to trade up more?
Trade up more.
Yeah, I think they, because they remember they were trying to trade with the Chargers in the first round.
I mean, think of it this way. What are the chances that 10 guys the Eagles just picked make their team?
Right.
I mean, yeah. I think part of the theory was let's have 6 or 7 better players
zero.
Than 10 players.
There's 0%. 0%
I
chance
agree.
That happens.
That's why I was surprised that they walked away with 10 players instead of 7. You know,
why? I think it's really wise to the breadth concept.
Well, if like, you're going to be cutting guys, I mean, we're going to cut 3 or 4 guys.
Throw 10 guys and compete it out. And you'll get the best.
I was surprised and or actually somewhat shocked by that. Let's get to the Twitter poll question of the day. It's brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Check out Armin's certified one-owner pre-owned pickup truck and SUVs at ArminChevy.com. That's Armin. Chevy.com together. Let's drive. Poll question. Do you like what Howie did in rounds 2 through 7 of the draft? Yes or no? You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. Coming up in about 5 minutes, an individual that will be at the White House today, Mr. Elliot Shurparks. Eagles team goes to the White House today. It'll be interesting to find out the Milton Williams and the Josh Sweats and the CJ GJs. John, you would show up if you weren't part of the team anymore, right? Like, that's a weird dynamic. Like, team gets back together. Like, is Goddard going to be there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is Goddard and Howie going to be standing next to each other when they're in a standoff? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just
it feels like this is one of those things where bygones are let be.
Look, Milton Williams got paid $100 million. He certainly can't be mad at the Eagles. But we'll talk to Elliot in a few minutes and find out, you know, some of those guys that aren't on the team anymore, are they going to be there or not? Let's get to Ken and Cinnamon. And Ken, good morning.
Good morning, friends. How are you?
Great, Ken.
So, on the whole Shedeur Sanders thing, that's so bizarre. I didn't think he was as good as people were talking about him being. So, you know, I don't think it's as big a deal that he slid as far as he did, because I just thought he was, I just didn't see it on the tape.
But here's what makes it a big deal, Ken. It's the first time ever that a guy could maybe go in the top five.
Quarterback.
And then goes in the fifth round.
Quarterbacks always go the other way. Well, I shouldn't say always. You know, the history has shown us, like, we still have the video of guys like Aaron Rodgers sitting there in that room waiting. But Aaron Rodgers, his ordeal ended at, like, whatever it was, 22 or 3 or 26. This is not even – this is the whole day – The whole first day was gone. The whole second day was gone, and he's the third day.
He obviously hurt himself dramatically in the pre-draft process with stuff he said. I mean, that seems pretty clear.
No question about it. The other thing for me is I don't know how long ESPN is going to continue to pay Mel Kiper Jr. to go on television and say NFL teams have no idea how to evaluate quarterbacks.
Mel was really misguided with how he presented the Shedeur Sanders situation for one primary reason. He was not talking about how Shedeur Sanders had turned teams off. He kept talking about talent, which is part of it, but he kept not talking about the stuff that teams were turned off by, and which is also part of it. I thought Mel looked foolish.
Just for context, in 94 when he made, you know, he had the infamous run-in with Bill Polian, I think it was.
No, it wasn't Bill Polian. It was someone else from the Colts.
But the quarterback that he was – and he was saying the exact same things. NFL teams don't know how to evaluate quarterbacks. And the quarterback that he was losing it over was Trent Dilfer. So just for a point of context.
The other thing I'd say. I thought his point – like. Yes, NFL teams get it wrong at quarterback at times. Like, that is true. They get it wrong at defensive tackle at times. They get it wrong at wide receiver at times. I mean, Jalen Reagor was a first-round pick. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was a second-round pick. Like, they get it wrong in every position. They get it right at every position. I thought Mel seemed really foolish in a lot of ways this weekend.
Well, I was a little surprised that the Eagles obviously had a higher grade on Makuba than they did on Xavier Watts. I thought Xavier Watts is a better player. Obviously, the Eagles don't agree with me, and they get paid to do that. Day three, the guy that I'm looking at is Drew Kendall, the center that they drafted out of Boston College. Because when I look at this guy physically and I look at him on tape, he screams guard to me. And he looks like he could be a really kind of a dark horse, you know, opportunity to slide in there at right guard, because bigger than most centers typically are, the Eagles don't typically go with 6'3" centers, and he's mean. If you put the tape on this guy, he likes abuse.
All right, Ken, give me an answer. Like the Shedeur Sanders slide and everything that went with the whole weekend, what else was unbelievable? You can win Elvis Costello tickets.
It was unbelievable that we shut down an entire country during COVID.
That was a remarkable and unprecedented situation, to say the least. All right, let's listen to Tom Pelissero, because the Shedeur Sanders situation was unbelievable on a lot of fronts. The prank phone call, the whole thing. Listen to Pelissero. I mean, John, this is some interesting intel. And this was Saturday morning, prior to the draft resuming with the fourth round. Mm-hmm. So he hadn't been picked in rounds 1, 2, or 3. Pelissero giving you some insight on some of why Shedeur Sanders hadn't yet been picked. Here's what he said.
Philosophically, some teams feel like you are drafting at the quarterback position specifically. If you think you've got a starter, you take him in round 1. If you're drafting somebody to be your backup, You don't want to do that until day three. I spoke last night with one general manager who is considering taking Shedeur Sanders today. He pointed back all the way to March 2024 and something that Shedeur's father, Deion Sanders, said on a podcast talking about both Shedeur and Travis Hunter, saying that if they are drafted by a team that they don't want to go to, he's going to step in and pull an Eli, meaning force those players to not actually go to that team and try to get them traded. Throughout the pre-draft process, Shedeur Sanders very much proceeded as if he was dictating to clubs where he was going to go rather than how the draft works, which is the other way around. And there were a bunch of opportunities missed at the various checkpoints through that pre-draft process. Go all the way back to All-Star season. Instead of going to the Senior Bowl, he went to the East-West Shrine Bowl in his backyard in Dallas. Despite an NFL memo saying if you go to these All-Star games, you have to practice, Shedeur chose not to. At the Combine, it is now well documented some of his formal interviews did not go well. One assistant coach told me in all his years, it was the worst formal interview he'd ever been through.
I mean, that's, you know, that last statement right there.
I wonder, man, what goes into that exactly?
Well, probably arrogance would be my guess.
I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, I mean,
that.
Think of it this way. Shedeur Sanders was on record saying, well, let's play the audio of Shedeur Sanders talking about culture, because I thought this was so misguided. I mean, especially for some of these teams are very successful. Do the Pittsburgh Steelers need to change their culture? No. I think what they need to do is get better players, but I don't think their culture with Mike Tomlin is off base. If I'm Mike Tomlin and Shedeur Sanders is telling me, you know, you got to change your culture, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm not drafting him. Here's what Shedeur Sanders said further back.
If you ain't trying to change the franchise or the culture, don't give me. So you should know history repeats itself over and over and over, and I've done it over and over and over, so it should be no question why an NFL franchise should pick me. You think I'm worried about what critics say or what people got to say? You know who my dad is? They hated on him too. So it's like it's almost normal. Without people hating, it's not normal for us. So we like the adversity. We like everything that comes with the name. That's why we are who we are.
I mean, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm like, no thanks. Don't, because that's not why Pittsburgh hasn't won. Now listen, you can make the case where they haven't won because a quarterback, and Shedeur Sanders can be that quarterback. I think his dad really hurt him with this part of it. Really hurt him.
You can feel it. At that junction, you know, like it, when he's saying we, when he's using the royal we to refer to him and his dad.
And his dad had like legit top five talent to the point where he's probably the best cornerback ever.
That's what's different here.
Yeah, of course it is.
You know, he's linking himself to his dad. And of course, you know, that's your coach. That is like, he's been a great part of this every step of the way, but he was also maybe the most gifted player I ever played against. I never saw someone move that fast in real life until
it's
saw Deion on the field.
Right.
Like you can't even conceptualize it on tape. It just doesn't even translate
how
for
he would
some
move.
Reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you see that in real life, you just can't even believe it.
Right,
he was so amazingly gifted. This Shedeur, he's an accurate quarterback who understands the game and coverage, but he's not gifted like that.
Yeah, pretty
not even close to gifted like that.
Incredible development, obviously, in sports. And we'll see how this one plays out. We're all going to be watching for years to see what Shedeur Sanders has in the NFL. All right, coming up in 1 minute, Elliot Shore Parks with his report on the Eagles, the draft. Obviously, the Birds going to the White House today. We'll get to Elliot coming up in 1 minute. All right, Mother's Day, it's almost upon us, coming up. One of the great days every year. And whether you're shopping for your mom, your wife, your daughter, whomever it may be, Family and Company Jewelers is the place to go. No one comes close to their selection, their prices, and, of course, their service. I love their showroom, man. Family and Company Jewelers showroom, it's an extravaganza of jewelry. You got to see it to believe it. It's phenomenal. Awesome. Huge selection of gifts at every price point, and obviously make for all sorts of wonderful options for you to get your mother, your wife. Mother's Day up ahead, so make sure you're prepared. Make sure you show her the love by getting her a gift that she will love, a gift from Family and Company Jewelers, as always, South Jersey's diamond destination. All right, let's talk to Elliot Shore Parks, who's on the beat and perhaps already down in D.C. Good morning, Elliot.
What up? How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Super.
So, Elliot, we're going to do a lot of draft stuff with you, but let's start with the White House reality and the visit today.
Sounds good.
So you are going, right?
Correct, yeah. So the event is at 4 o'clock today. Not yet in Washington, heading down there soon. But, yeah, I mean, you know, barring anything changing between now and 4 o'clock, the event should go on.
And so a couple things here. Do we know if the former players that are no longer Eagles will be there? The Milton Williams, the Josh Sweat, CJ, GJ. What do you know about those guys?
Yeah, so I don't have a list of who's going and who's not. Now, I'm assuming they're invited, so we will see who goes today. And, you know, I think with this today, that's probably one of the bigger stories, right? Like, who goes, who doesn't? You know, with some of the former players, you know, you could maybe say they, you know, they're in their other cities doing their OTAs. Maybe they weren't able to make it. But I do think from a leadership perspective, it'll be interesting to see who goes among the main guys, you know, later today.
And Goddard's another one, Elliot. I mean, they're in a standoff right now over money and, you know, like, are he and Howie Roseman standing right next to each other down there?
Yeah, no, I agree. That is another awkward part of this. And the Goddard thing after the draft this weekend, you know, I don't know if you guys played the audio or heard it, but Howie was asked after the draft about Goddard and his future. And it was so cold the way he talked about it. It almost makes me think it was like a chess move that they're trying to convince him to take a pay cut to stay. But every indication I still get is that I would be surprised if Goddard is on the team.
Wow. All right, but real quick, before we get to personnel, because I want to do a lot on that, what's the protocol for getting in there? Like, for a 4 o'clock event, what time do you start moving into the White House?
It's a great question. So I'm going to get on the train here in a little bit. I left myself a bunch of time. Still waiting to get official directions on how to do that. So I've been to the White House like on a tour, maybe when I was in like third grade, but I have not obviously been there never like an official capacity. The team didn't go in 2018. So yeah, it'll be a very interesting day all around for sure.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Elliot Short Parks with us. So Elliot, the draft, how do you think Howie did?
I would say I like the draft. You know, I don't know if I leave it being like, oh my God, they got steal after steal. I think it was a different draft than I'm used to. You know, going into the draft, you know, there are a couple things that I thought you could really like look at and say, okay, these are the guys they're going to draft. And we've talked about it, like the top 30 visits. You know, in the past 5 years or whatever, they bring guys in for a top 30 visit. There's a good shot they draft those guys. And maybe this is wrong, but from my understanding, not a single player they drafted was in the top 30. They also was a top 30 visit, I should say. Yeah, a top 30 visit. Yeah.
Yeah. Did they give any explanation for that, Elliot? Was that simply a mechanism of they didn't expect these guys to be around at that specific moment? Like, that's what I thought initially. But then once you get past the first round, like, you've certainly scouted everyone.
Yeah, so I do think with Jihad Campbell, there's a realistic argument, and I do believe that it's true that they did not think they would have a chance to get him. So I do understand that one. And the other part of that is, you know, Campbell has to agree to come in for a top 30. So maybe both sides felt, you know what, there's not a realistic shot here, and they didn't do it. But with the other guys, you're right. Now, outside of just the top 30, though, like, both secondary guys they drafted are undersized. You know, Ty Robinson is a bit on the older side. The tackle they took, I think Hinton out of Michigan is a bit on the older side. So for me, I think, you know, we'll talk about the players, and there's a lot to like about the class that they got. But my main takeaway from the weekend is it really feels like you could see maybe Vic Fangio's influence on this draft. It didn't feel like a Howie Roseman draft to me. It felt like Vic had a lot of say as to what defensive guys they took. And honestly, that's probably for the better. He clearly earned that right and knows what he's doing.
So speaking of it, the Vic Fangio impact on this draft, is it Smile Mondin? Do we pronounce
I believe it's Smile is what I was told, but you know,
linebacker Smile Mondin.
Yes.
Small for a linebacker. Feels like in my era, we would have called him like, okay, he's going to be like a special teams guy, teams maven out the gates, and then we'll see how he works into things. So is he expected to be the off-ball type? I am now thrown for a loop, Elliot. Every time we see linebacker, I can't trust myself to assess whether he's an edge guy or an off the ball guy because of what you did to us last Friday.
So Smile Mondin, I think, is much more of a true linebacker. Okay. I don't think he's somebody you will see line up on the edge. And what I like about him is, first of all, next year, I think he can be a really, really good special teams player for this team. He's ultra quick, ultra athletic. And, you know, this isn't a special team stat, and maybe tackling on special teams is a little different. You'd probably be able to speak to that better than I would. But last year, he had a missed tackle rate of only 5%. And for context, I would have been third best in the NFL last year. And I know that's not apples to apples there, but the point is he is an excellent tackler that's super quick and super athletic. And to me, that just seems to translate over to special teams really well for this team next year. Now, long term, where will he play on defense? He's very raw still. I don't think he's ready to go out there on defense just yet. But Vic Fangio has shown he's good at developing players, as is Nick Sirianni. And there's a lot to work with there with Mondon.
So I'm just wondering, what compare the two, Mondon and Jihad Campbell. Is like, am I supposed to assume Jihad Campbell is now our version of Micah Parsons? Like, is that what will use him like?
Yeah, so I think that's what they want him to be. You know, when Howie talked on Thursday after drafting him, I don't think it's a coincidence the two players he essentially referenced when talking about Jihad Campbell was Micah Parsons and Abdul Carter. Now, that doesn't mean it'll be right away. Like, Micah Parsons' first year in the NFL, he played over 500 snaps at off-ball linebacker, and I think it was only about 200 or so snaps at edge, and then slowly that number started to change. Less at off-ball, more at edge. I think next year you will see Jihad Campbell take snaps at off-ball linebacker, and I think you'll see them get creative with how they use him. But the point I was making on Friday, and I still firmly believe this, is that I think their hope is that, you know, next year, his second year, like, the transition is to an edge because of his body type and his skill set. Mm-hmm. But he still has work to do as an edge. He doesn't come to the NFL with a set of pass rush moves. He didn't take a ton of snaps there. So it's similar to Micah Parsons. But remember, again, Micah Parsons didn't start at edge to begin his career.
Elliot, the safety situation, do you think Sidney Brown lost the inside track to be a starter this weekend?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, second round pick. That tells me they didn't want Sidney Brown starting.
Now, you know,
Sidney
I think was second, if I'm not mistaken.
He was
second or high third. You could look that up.
I think he might have been second.
Okay. Yeah, you're making me question myself there, but I'm pretty sure he was a second round pick as well. But regardless, he's not the most recent second round pick, and
yes,
that's more what matters. And Vic Fangio was not here when he was drafted. So Makuba, you watch him, you know, in the brief time I've been able to watch him since they drafted him, you can see what Vic likes about him. Like, he's very instinctual. He reminds me, honestly, he's like a carbon copy of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I can't speak to the personality, and obviously with Chauncey, a big part of him is his personality. But the two things that reminds me, or three things I guess I should say, about Makuba with Chauncey is, one, he can go up and play slot if you need him to. Obviously, Chauncey started as a slot. Two, he creates a ton of turnovers. And if you look at the players they drafted this year on defense, they all created a ton of turnovers. But three, and this is the concerning part for me, he was a really bad tackler last year. I think his missed tackle rate, I have it here if I'm not mistaken, it was around 14% or so. I mean, it was bad. It was right there with Chauncey's, what Chauncey had in the NFL. So he is a hard hitter for sure. And you guys, you know, I'm sure have talked about some of the big hits he's made. But Sidney Brown can hit too. The issue is, can you tackle? Like, it's great to be able to hit, but if you're flying by somebody trying to land a big hit, then that's a problem. Now, the tackling on the team improved last year as it went on, so maybe they do get Makuba into the building and he's better at it, but that would be a concern of mine, in addition to the size, obviously.
So, Elliot, Sidney Brown was a third-round pick.
Third round. Elliot, tell me which of these surprised you more. Both surprised me a good amount. Which surprised you more? That Howie walked away from this draft without drafting a tight end, or that with such a strong roster, he chose to take 10 players and didn't package to move up more like he did in round one, and walks away with 10 players, and there's no way 10 players can make this team?
Yeah, they're both great questions. And I would say this is just pure opinion here. This is not informed or anything. But to me, it just feels like maybe the draft did not go the way they expected. Like, they didn't think Jihad Campbell would be there, and they had to, you know, kind of pivot and go up and get him. The fact that no top 30 visits were drafted at all, you know, makes me feel at least like the guys they thought could be there weren't. Howie talked about kind of, you know, the difficulties of moving around in the draft when you are drafting 32nd essentially in every round. So I do think that when you talk about a tight end, like, did they go into the draft hoping to draft a tight end? Probably, but maybe the board just didn't fall that way. And then in terms of, you know, the bigger shock to me would be they went in with 8 picks and drafted 10 players. Like, I thought for sure they would package picks together.
Yeah.
And they ended up not doing that. So, you know, we can have all of our opinions on what the draft will be like leading up to it. The Eagles can have their own blueprint, but it really is like anything else in the way that, you know, 2 or 3 picks happen and your entire plan for the 3 days changes. So, yeah, I'm surprised though with both of those things.
We haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything much about Antoine Powell-Ryland. The guy was so productive coming off the edge. We talk a lot about Jahad Campbell being our edge guy. Edge, edge, edge. We know edge gets paid the most on the defensive side of the ball. This guy was third in the FBS in sacks last year, and he's sort of like an afterthought. We're not even talking about him at all. What makes him so productive, Elliot?
Yeah, so I've covered a lot of like 6th, 7th round picks by the Eagles in my time. I've never covered a draft pick that had this type of production this late in the draft. I mean, it is insane. His numbers, I don't know how deep you've dove into him, but like last year, 16 sacks and 19 tackles for a loss. That within itself is crazy. But then over the last 2 years, 26 sacks and 34 tackles for a loss. Also crazy. And then this one, honestly, might be my favorite stat of any player they drafted over these past few days. Over the past 3 years, he has 9 forced fumbles, and he forced 3 in each season. So it's not like he had some fluky year where he forced 8. Each of the past 3 years,
he's forced three fumbles. A misprint, Elliot. I thought for sure, they just copied and pasted from the season before. Yeah. They didn't.
So I still question it as I say it right here, but it's crazy. So you're right. Statistically, he is, I mean, unreal numbers. Now, why does he fall? Well, he's viewed as undersized. He's a bit of a tweener. Yeah. But those are, in my opinion, like, I'll take a chance on a guy with that type of production. When you're using a 6th-round pick and you compare him to a guy like Cameron Williams, who they also took. Cameron Williams, a tackle out of Texas, he has all the physical measurables you want. Like, he is the best ball of clay you could hand Jeff Stoutland as an offensive tackle, but he was horrendous last year for Texas. And then on the flip side, Antoine Powell-Ryland is probably not the best physical ball of clay for an edge, but the stats are unreal. So I like both those picks for different reasons, and I am very excited to watch Powell-Ryland when camp begins.
Good stuff. OTA starts when, Elliot?
Well, so OTAs are going on now, but you know, they're not doing any football activity yet. I'd have to check when the first time they get on the field is. I've been so wrapped up in the draft, but they're in the, well, not today they're in the building because they're in the White House, but the OTAs have already begun.
Final thing, Elliot, in that White House today, in the White House, you got one job. Talk to the chief usher. Okay. Make sure he knows to leave a great spot for the future portrait of the hammer.
Okay? I was going to say, you want me to bring a note? I can try to put it in the oval desk for you.
Okay. Not a note. Just you know, I'll probably be, 51, 52? A very prominent spot on a prominent wall. That's all I ask.
All right, I'll tell them they have some time, but not too long.
And remember, it has to be a pretend, Elliot. A prominent but pretend wall.
All right,
we'll see if they know you.
Yep. Have fun
down
there.
Awesome. Have a nice
day. Thanks, buddy. There he is, Elliot Shore Parks. All right, 215-592-9494. Let's play some of the audio of when these guys got the call from Howie Roseman and the Eagles brass that they were being taken. Let's start with Andrew Makuba. He's the safety, and the Eagles notified him on Friday night that they were picking him. Here's Howie and Makuba.
This is Howie Roseman from the Eagles.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, you ready to come to Philly?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to pick you with this pick. Congratulations.
Man, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Looking forward to chatting with you tomorrow a little bit more, but go enjoy this night. We couldn't be more excited. Let's go, man, all right?
No doubt, man. Let's do it.
Andrew, congratulations, man. We're patient the whole round, waiting for you, and we got you.
Now, y'all got the best one for sure.
Best one for sure. I think he's referring to the Eagles team. Best team. I'm on the best team. I'm on the best one for sure. I assume that's what he means.
Did he say, you got the best one for sure?
I thought he was talking about himself.
For sure. I thought he said, I got the best one for sure.
Oh, really?
Meaning the Eagles, but I could be wrong.
I thought he said, you got the best one, but I could be wrong.
You got the best one.
All right.
And yeah.
You guys might be right. You guys might be right.
Might as well tell the owner. You did.
That's what Brady did when Kraft drafted Brady. He said, this is the best decision you ever made. Mm-hmm. That's what Brady told Kraft. All right, let's listen to defensive tackle Ty Robinson. So he's from Nebraska. Played with Cam Jurgens. I think he played with Cam at Nebraska. They know each other. I know that.
Probably did.
Well, Cam's been here, what?
Three years,
I think. So I don't know. But I know they know each other.
Well, I'm sure they crossed over. Cam was, you know, a senior. He was probably a freshman. Well,
some of these guys played four years different. How about the dude that played, that got drafted, that played 7 years of college football?
Yeah.
He's
24, right?
Oh my God, I don't know what he is.
He's the same age as I was when I came out. I mean, I was old.
And you were 5 years in college, right?
I was 5 years in college, but I was also September 4th birthday.
Oh, double whammy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ty Robinson gets drafted. By the way, I like this Clint guy, whatever his name is, defensive line coach guy. This guy sounds like John Ritchie's kind of football coach. Let's listen to Ty Robinson with the gang.
Ty, what's going on? It's Howie Roseman. I'm with the Eagles. How you doing, brother?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're going to pick you right here.
Awesome. That's
all right. You're a Philadelphia awesome. Eagle. Congratulations. Can't wait to get you here.
Hey, Ty. How you doing? It's Coach
Sirianni. I'm doing great, Coach. How are you?
Hey, congrats, man.
Thank you so much.
I got a lot of excited people in this room.
Same here.
I'm sure you guys got the same
Georgia
thing.
Dogs. Very well.
Let's go, baby. All right. I'm happy for you. Let's get to work. I'm going to put you on the phone with our defensive line coach, Clint Hurt.
Big dog, how you doing? Doing great, Coach. How are you? I mean, I'm doing awesome. Congratulations to you. Let's get ready to maximize this opportunity. You get ready to kick some ass for the damn Eagles now. You got me?
Yes, sir. Yes,
all
sir.
All right, brother. All right, man. Congrats again. I'll talk to you soon.
That 3 or 4 seconds might have been my favorite of all the calls. Let's get ready to kick some ass with the Eagles. It's, you know, that guy sounds the way he looks. Because, John, you know, that guy looks, he's bigger than some of the football players. That guy's a massive.
He looks the part, yeah.
That guy's a big dude.
Yes.
All right, let's go to
massive man.
Joe in Yadin right now. Joseph, good morning, buddy.
Good morning. Top of the morning to all of you.
What's up?
Two things. First, the Phillies. Small ball.
Yeah, there was some.
Small freaking ball.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some.
Yes, and pitching. Actually got some good pitching, too. And, again, I no offense, I think they're not going to make a playoff because, again, the roster is a 30-year-old bunch of players who maybe within 3 years, between now and next 3 years, that's it. It's all they got. They got to have. What do you feel?
I'm not sure. I think they will. If I had to guess, I'd say they probably make the playoffs, but I feel a lot more shaky about it than I did 2 weeks ago, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think they're still more likely to make it than not, but they're going to have to work at it. You know, one thing that struck me is the Braves, and I think they took a step back. I think it was yesterday, but the Braves started winning some games. I know they're 7-3 in their last 10, so they're going to be coming up in the standings, obviously. And, you know, there's some loaded, you know, teams out west. So the Phillies are going to have to scrap to make the playoffs.
They need to figure out the balance between the small ball and running and finding a way to hit the ball out of the park at the same time. They're just not there yet. No. But that doesn't mean they can't be a really good team. That doesn't mean they can't get where they want to go, which is the postseason. And then all bets are off if they get hot. Who knows?
Joe, I still lean in the direction of saying they're going to make the playoffs because of the starting pitching. And I know it hasn't been as good with some of the guys this year as anticipated, but it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, especially when at some point you throw Ranger in there and you throw Painter in there.
Up too, yeah.
Like, it's just hard for me to imagine a team with those six starting pitchers. I'm not talking about Taiwan. The six guys that we are proud to have as Philly starting pitchers. I mean, for a team to have those six guys and miss the playoffs, that would be, to me, a surprise.
Yeah. And also, too, regarding John Ritchie, when I called the last time going in my best player, he is. He's a blue collar worker where, like, for example,
wait, who's John Mickey? I don't know who
John Ritchie. I'm sorry, John Ritchie. I'm very hyper. I had my coffee today.
No, it's all right. Ritchie, that's what he said.
He totally said Ritchie. It was John clear as day.
Thanks for busting my chops. I really appreciate
truly
that.
Truly hard of hearing.
I thought he said John Mickey.
You got headphones on.
You got your ears clean. You got your ear wax problem. I really believe that.
Maybe you
got
to talk more coherently so I can understand you.
Okay. I'll try to.
No, I'm joking around.
Well, with John Ritchie, my son-in-law played and went to the University of Pittsburgh, and he started as fullback for three straight years.
No way.
Yes, he was that good.
When was this?
Oh, God, he's 47 now. So,
he was close to Ironhead Hayward. I mean,
you got it.
Craig Hayward was close to his time there at Pitt. Mm-hmm. which is amazing.
Gotcha.
All right, he wasn't drafted, but he had he was a free agent. Chicago Bears picked him up. Here's the last cut.
Bad.
Hey, Joe, give me an answer. What was unbelievable, Joe? You can win the Elvis Costello tickets.
Okay, show my age here. You know, the missile, the Cuba Rutten missile issue back then, in the 60s.
Yeah, that's no joke. Cuban Missile Crisis was kind of unbelievable. We'll have to figure out how we judge that one. I don't know. There's a lot to it. 215-592-9494.
Wow, it really was unbelievable, though.
It is. I mean, it happened.
One of the, yeah.
Closest the world ever came to nuclear war.
Yes, you're right.
Cuban Missile Crisis. 215-592-94. You know what cracks me up sometimes, Sean, when people are talking about younger kids? And
is that officially
what?
The closest that the world's ever come?
Well, I think there's two. It's considered there's two that are frequently cited. That's one. And the other was the time in 83 when the Soviets thought we had launched something. Or I think it was that they thought we had launched something and there was that one guy, but it was a misread. And there was that one guy that said, let's not launch. There was that one Soviet guy.
There was the one Soviet guy who was being told, press the button. Launch World War III. And he said, wait.
Yep.
I'm not going to do that.
Correct.
Wait.
Let's wait a second here.
Man.
It was kind of like Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman in Crimson Tide. It was a similar, like, are we taking that step or not? Those are, I believe, the two times it's considered the closest to nuclear war. What I was going to say is I crack up sometimes, Sean, when people talk about, you know, kids and you got to be careful with what you teach them, like from the standpoint of don't put too much on them and overburden them.
Mm-hmm.
Like our parents and grandparents' generation, they were under desks as like six-year-olds being told to prepare for nuclear war in school.
That's true.
Like I think kids can handle a little bit more than sometimes adults think they can handle.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think you're right.
I mean, come on now. With that said, that 21-year-old kid of the defensive coordinator should be smacked.
Yes.
I need someone to answer this question. If you were the parent of the 21-year-old punk that pranked Shedeur Sanders, if you were that kid's parent, what would you do? Because that kid is a jackass for punking and pranking Shedeur Sanders the way he did. What would you do? 215-592-9494. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on 94 WIP.